Tonight, Ed comes to us, actually came and volunteered after a meeting a little while back. And that you'd think that would happen a lot, but I usually have to track people down. And Ed is secretary of the newcomers group that meets here on Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock and very active in working the program, coming up on a second year in the program now. I think he picked up a two-year chip in May. And he invited me. I had the honor of being a discussion leader for his group not too long ago. And it was a great experience for me, and I'm sure tonight will be a great experience for y'all. Please welcome Ed.
Thank you, Jim. Good evening, everybody. My name is Ed, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 12th, 2008. Not all that long ago, but done a lot of living since that time, feels like. Drank for 29 years. I do have some notes just in case I freeze up here. And I got a couple little things that I will read along the way. I came in here, just short of 2 years ago, and I started coming to the meetings, and I was hanging around on the outside, and I was just looking for that daily reprieve, and I was hoping to glean from everyone else just a good feeling about staying sober, but I still hadn't actually decided that I was going to do any kind of work. I'd been in AA before, and I'd never done any real work as far as steps goes or getting a sponsor. So I was here for 52 days, and it was after the Thursday night men's meeting. Somebody spoke to me, and I don't know, they just rubbed me wrong, and I got home and said, you know, I already forget what it feels like to get drunk. Maybe I'll just have a little bit. So I drank after the meeting that Thursday night, and I continued to drink through Sunday. I got up Sunday, May 11th. There were two beers in the house. I drank those, and of course that wasn't enough. Went down to Ruby Tuesdays, you know, saddled up to the bar. The waitress was real friendly. She was pushing the drinks and having these little gin and tonics, and that wasn't big enough, so I had the doubles. And I was only about 2 miles from home, but when it was time for me to leave, you know, somebody stopped me at the door and said, you're, you know, too drunk to drive. You don't need to be driving. I said, okay, well, I live close by. I'll walk home. So I walked down the sidewalk for a little ways, and then I doubled back, got my car, and drove drunk, something that I have done probably 1,000 times, got caught 4 times. And I had some near misses, too, along the way. So that's just a day in the life of, you know, my last drink. I came in here on May 12th. That was a Monday night. It was the speaker's meeting. I had every intention of getting a sponsor, but the person that I had in mind was not here. So I came back to the Tuesday night meeting, the beginner's meeting, and I thought, well, yeah, it's 8 o'clock, it's Tuesday night, but I'm in the wrong place. This is the beginner's meeting. I'm not a beginner. I've been around AA for years, but I really was still a beginner because I had never worked the steps. I stayed. The discussion leader was someone that I felt like I could relate to. He told a lot about his background, and afterwards I asked him to be my sponsor. He said, I'll be your temporary sponsor, but you have to show me that you're serious. You need to call me for 30 days, and after that we'll get to work. So I did that. I said I drank for 29 years. I was born December 24th, 1961, in Indianapolis, Indiana. I was delivered to my mom in a stocking. My dad was 17 when he got married. My mom was 19. And by the time he was 24, he had 3 kids. And I don't know if this is what contributed to it, but my dad was an alcoholic. So I am an adult child of an alcoholic. One of my first remembrances as a kid, my parents didn't fight much, but if alcohol was there to fuel the fire, then, you know, every once in a while they would get into an argument. And I might have been about 10 years old, living up in Michigan at the time. And my parents had come home from Vince's Club 33. And my mom made my dad a tuna fish sandwich. And he sat in his recliner with his TV stand next to him and had his Busch beer, as always. And she said something to get him fired up. And he took that TV tray and he smacked it. And I'll never forget that tuna fish sticking to the wall across the living room. And that scared the daylights out of me. I mean, it was a traumatic experience that I have never forgotten. And I cowered behind his recliner. And that was my first experience with the negative side of alcohol. My dad was an alcoholic. He had trouble keeping jobs when he did work. You know, he made good money. Let me see what my note says here. When I was, we moved down to Georgia. It was kind of like a geographic change for my parents because they were having some trouble. And once again, you know, my dad was without work. And his favorite hangout was the Steak and Ale. He would go there even when he didn't have work, and he'd run a tab. And a lot of times we didn't have any food. And I would actually walk up to the Steak and Ale. We were living in an apartment at that time. I would walk into the Steak and Ale and ask him for money for dinner. And I would think, oh, this will embarrass him. You know, he'll come on home and he'll take care of his family like he's supposed to. But no, he was in his cups. He was in his environment. And so he felt comfortable there. He'd give a little bit of money, and then I would go on. And because of that, I was one of those people that said I would never drink. I went to Catholic grade school. My mom insisted on that. And then I went to public high school. And when I first got there, I came from a small grade school, big public high school. I thought, well, I'm never going to have any friends. I think I'll just concentrate on my grades. So I started out getting good grades. I joined the basketball team, and those were the people that ended up being my friends. I held out until my junior year. I guess I was 17 when I had my first drink. It was a Miller High Life. I was with my friend Gary. We were driving in his Pontiac Ventura, going right past the high school, and I had that first Miller High Life. I thought the beer tasted terrible. Didn't like it. But that was my first one, and my old pledge of never drinking was gone right then. It wasn't long after that that I had my first blackout. It was probably maybe my third or fourth time drinking, and I was drinking rum and Cokes. I was at a friend's house. The parents were away, and the story was that I picked up a television, and I was running around the room threatening the guys, and everybody thought it was kind of funny. But when I passed out in the front yard, they just left me there because it was better to do that than disturb me and see what else I might get into. I remember some other times in high school. I played poker with some guys, and I was shotgunning beers one time, and I fell down the stairs. I don't remember doing this, but my buddy caught me at the bottom of the stairs before I smashed my head open on the concrete below. And, you know, I was already drinking in a blackout. And I drank more than my friends, even though we all partied together. I always had to have a little bit more. And I remember they would try to stop me. Senior year, I also learned about marijuana. That's a part of my story, but I'm not going to bring that up too much. My senior year, we got to do half days if we had enough credits. So starting my winter and spring quarters, we did half days. And so we would go, you know, we would start drinking right after school. And by that point, I had straight A's up to my senior year. And in my fall quarter, I did get a Navy ROTC scholarship to college. And I went to my dream school, Notre Dame. You know, I was raised Catholic, and I used to live right up by South Bend, Indiana. So that was my dream school. But my winter and spring quarter, I started partying, drank a lot. You know, drank. Routine was get a 12-pack after school. And I even had a part-time job at Winn-Dixie during that time. And I did show up one time, and I was drunk, and they knew it. and they covered up for me. They said, go work back in the stock room. And it wasn't too long after they put me back in the stock room that something smashed. And so I was sweeping it up, but all I was doing was sweeping it up from one side and back over to the other side. I was completely out of it, so they sent me home. They didn't fire me. And they also didn't fire anybody when they discovered that some beer had been stolen. Apparently somebody had been putting cases of beer out the back door. And they talked to me and another guy, and they said, we have a suspicion, but we don't have any proof. We want it to stop. So those were some of the things that I did. We'd go midnight bowling sometimes after Winn-Dixie, me and a buddy, and I got pulled over once. We had a cooler of beer in the back. I had been drinking, but the cop knew my friend's mother, who was a teacher, so I said, just go to the Waffle House and drink some coffee and you'll be okay. Another time I almost got a DUI in high school. We were at the Waffle House and we decided to do the dine and dash thing. I was in my car and I backed out to make the quick getaway. I backed out right into the dumpster. Made a big noise. The getaway was pretty much blown, but we still took off down Atlanta Road. Something told us we better go back. We went back to pay our bill and the cops came. But no DUI then. So, one other incident from high school is my senior trip, after graduation, Daytona Beach, Florida. And it was an all-you-can-drink place down there. And, of course, I was determined to win that. I could drink the most, and I drank 23 vodka Collins, I think. And we tried to go to the dog track after that, and they wouldn't even let us in the dog track because I was so sloppy drunk. We went back to the hotel room and said, whatever you do, do not puke in this room. And I puked all over the room. And that pretty much wraps up my high school experience. My what it was like can be broken down into when I first started drinking in high school, college, then I was in the Navy, and then I came back to Atlanta. College, at Notre Dame, you could drink freely up there. I didn't have any real incidents up there. Not until my senior year, once again, when it looked like I was going to graduate after all. I was scared to death of the place. I didn't think I had what it took to be there. But by senior year, I knew I was going to graduate. I was going to go into the Navy. And I would go to senior bar a lot, and they would have quarter beer nights. Why they would have quarter beer nights on a Wednesday night, I don't know, but I was pretty smart about not scheduling a class early in the morning on Thursdays. And one time I was driving my friend's car home, so I didn't have a car up there, and I slid on the ice right into the guardrail, and I was drunk, and I told him that I'd got sideswiped in the parking lot, so I had to cover that one up. Not too many binges or anything, but I do remember looking forward to the Friday night happy hours, and wherever there was the cheap beer, I was there. Me and my roommates used to have the hunch punch parties once a quarter, and that was the grain alcohol. And we'd serve it in a big pickle barrel, and we'd put the Notre Dame toilet seat on top of it so everybody could dip in. And, it tasted like Kool-Aid, so we encouraged the women to have as much Kool-Aid as they wanted to. I got through college, and it was time to go into the Navy. I was borderline. My grades weren't that great in college, but they let me go to flight school. So I was sent down to Pensacola. I was going to be a backseater, like Goose in Top Gun. I didn't have the depth perception to become a pilot. I went down to Pensacola, and I was sent down there around Thanksgiving. And I went down and I passed my physical. I said, this is great. I passed my physical. I went back up to Atlanta for Thanksgiving break and was hanging out with my old high school buddies. And it was Sunday night. And I do remember there being a bong involved Sunday night. And I went back to flight school Monday morning. I hadn't been assigned a slot yet, so I was in the waiting pool. So they had the muster that Monday morning for the waiting pool. I said, okay, we're going to do the random drug test. If your social security number ends in 1 or 7, then please give us a sample. Well, my social security number ends in 7, So the gig was up, and we were supposed to port upstairs to this room and have our test done. I just didn't show up. I just left. Went to drink as much beer as possible to piss it all out. That was my plan. I would drink a six-pack and then go jog up and down the pier, you know, drink it out, piss it out, sweat it out, whatever I had to do. I went to the library and learned a lot about the half-life of THC. And it's in the fat cells, by the way. It has a half-life of 8 days, which means it's half of it's gone in 8 days, but it tends to build up. Anyway, I was scared to death. I didn't know what I was going to do. We didn't have to muster in person every day. We sometimes just called in, so I would call in. I'd give them my name, and I'd get off that phone as quick as I could. And, you know, I had to report in person a couple of times, and they still hadn't said anything. Finally, about within 2 weeks, they said, well, we notice on your list that you haven't given us a sample yet. I said, okay, this is it. So I went in. I went right up to the door, put my hand this close to the doorknob, and turned away. And the next time we had a muster, they said, does anybody want to volunteer for this duty, this temporary duty? I took it. I was out of there, and I slipped through the crack. That was one of the times when I swore to God, if He got me out of this, that I would change my ways. And that pretty much, that does close the chapter on that part. I wasn't going to get kicked out of the Navy for that. While I was in Pensacola, I met a girl at a bar. She was kind of like the girl in Officer and a Gentleman. She just wanted to hook up with somebody that was a naval aviator. And 8 weeks later, I moved in with her. Well, you know, she was bad news. I can't blame it on her. I'm the one that made the decision. I made the choice. Caught her with another guy one time at a bar. And so what did I do? I went out and I hurt myself. I was angry. So I drove 100 miles an hour down the road out of there. I got pulled over. Got a DUI. That was in Pensacola. And following that, you know, the Navy automatically wants you to go through an assessment, an alcohol assessment. And the girl I was living with, she said, lie, lie, lie. I said, I don't drink that much. I don't need to lie. So I took part of her advice, and I broke it down to about half of what I really did. And after I told them that, they put me in treatment for 6 weeks. So I was at the Navy VA hospital in Pensacola, Florida for 6 weeks. I checked in December 30th, 1985. I was there for 6 weeks. I didn't believe I was an alcoholic at the time. I felt like I had just gotten in trouble, and yes, I had made a big mistake, and I was floored by the fact that they thought I needed treatment. I thought they were overreacting. I made it through the treatment. I had a counselor there. That was the hardest thing for me, was going into the group counseling and opening up about myself, because I had nothing to share. You know, I was there by mistake. I was too young to stop drinking. I just didn't think I had a problem. So finally he tells me, you're not sharing enough. He, you know, brings me into his office. You're not sharing enough. You better start opening up, or we're going to kick you out of here. And if he kicked me out, then I was out of the Navy, dishonorable discharge. And I sure didn't want that. So I remember I went into his office one day in private and said, okay, I have something that I want to confess that nobody knows. And I told him, well, sometimes I masturbate. And he said, that's it? That's all you've got? That wasn't what he was looking for. This guy, he looked like Yoda. He was he'd lived on the streets. He'd been a heroin addict. He was a hardliner, and he wasn't putting up with any crap. He let me get through treatment by the skin of my teeth, and I stayed in the Navy, and they gave me an assignment. They sent me to Agana, Guam. I didn't even know where Guam was, but sent me to a supply ship. And before I went, or as I was getting my orders to go there, I also got a letter from the Navy saying, we're going to process you out with a general discharge. And that was because I had been to the treatment and because I had gotten a DUI. Well, I wrote an impassioned letter saying I did everything that was required of me. I'd like to stay, and they let me stay. So another close call. I went out, served my 30 months in Guam on a Navy ship, and finished up my Navy tour without much incident. There was You know, heavy drinking involved with the Navy too, but never got in trouble for it. Before I left the island of Guam, I had learned how to ride a motorcycle. Very small place, 30 miles long, 8 miles wide, and that's how I got around. And I do remember once getting pulled over on my motorcycle, and the cop knew I was drunk, but he just let me go. So I'm still, you know, I'm skating through. I come back to Atlanta, and I don't get a job for the summer. I just party with my old high school friends, mainly playing basketball during the day, tennis, and then hanging out drinking at night until the money that I saved up from the Navy started running out. And my mom's second husband was leaving her for another woman, and now she was in dire straits, so I was going to help her out. I got a job, small-time job. Finally, I got a job with Delta in August of 1991. November of 1991, I got my second DUI. I was on my motorcycle, I was coming home, and before I got home, I stopped at a little karaoke place, which was like a quarter mile from my house. I said, I'll just walk home after I drink some Liquid Courage, and I'll sing some karaoke. Well, 10 martinis later, I totally forgot that plan about walking home, hopped on my motorcycle, and as I was prone to do during the day, I just cut right through the shopping center. And all I had to do was go up to the light and come around, but, you know, I wasn't thinking. And they caught me cutting through the shopping center, and I'm going right up into my neighborhood, and they pull up right behind me, and I'm a little wobbly on the bike, and they ask me where I live, and I look up, and I say, I live up right over there. So I missed my driveway like by three houses. That was my second DUI in Lilburn. Got off with a fine, basically. Speed things up a little bit. It was 1995. I got my third DUI. I got in a fight with my friend Rick on the way home from Buckhead. And I could have just stayed at his house, but I was belligerent. And I drove home, and I drove some roundabout way because I didn't even know where I was going. And at the stoplight, maybe a mile from my apartment, I fell asleep at the red light. Cobb County Police came up and tapped on the window, and that was it. That was DUI 3. And I went to the courts, and I was claiming it was DUI 2, hoping they didn't know about that Florida one in 1985. And right before I was going to go up for my plea, the lawyer comes up to me and says, they did this computer printout, and this is not your second DUI, this is your third. That changed things. Told work that I needed 2 weeks vacation, and I went to court, and after going to a lot of AA meetings and getting the signatures and doing everything like I was supposed to do and agreeing to move into a halfway house right after court, I got 1 week in jail. So I just showed back up to work a week early and said, I got bored of vacation. They didn't know what kind of vacation I was on. I managed to hide that. Lived in Stepping Stones down in College Park. It's a halfway house. And I stayed the required amount of time. It was close to work. I could bicycle to work. I could take MARTA, which is what I did. And I went to all the meetings, and I got a lot out of it. Stayed sober and exercised a lot. I turned to, as the book says, and more about alcoholism, I took to physical fitness as my substitute. Still not getting spiritual. I still had no higher power in my life. I didn't believe in that. Still wasn't convinced I was an alcoholic at this point, as far as I can remember. So after Stepping Stone, after a while, I went back to my drinking ways. And 2 years later, 97, I got my fourth DUI. This time I moved into Stepping Stone before I went to court. I just moved right on in. And stayed sober for 13 months that time. You know, I was under heavy supervision. That's what helped. I didn't have a sponsor. I wasn't working steps, but I was going to meetings every day, and I was living with guys. And, you know, I was exercising a lot, and I'd hear them say, oh, you don't even seem like an alcoholic. Well, they never saw me obliterated or any of that stuff. They just saw me doing what I was supposed to be doing. I stayed sober for 13 months that time. I remember when my 1 year came up, I had a home group, and they got a birthday cake for me. And I said, I'm going on vacation. I won't be here for my birthday. And they were all ticked off, and I didn't see what the big deal was. It was my birthday. You know, it was all about me. I didn't think anything about the group or the trouble of getting a cake or anything. I was done with that. And I'd stayed sober for a year, so once again, I didn't think I had a problem. So I picked up right where I left off. I was in Toronto on vacation. I was by myself because my buddy didn't make it. And March Madness was going on, and I had my first beer, a Canadian beer, and it went right back to where I had left off. It was just amazing. I didn't know that would happen. I didn't get in any trouble between 1997 and when I finally stopped drinking, May 12, 2008. But in 2007, I met a girl, and I've never had any kind of serious relationship. I've never been married. I don't have any kids. And I think a lot of that would have to be the opportunities that I lost because of my alcoholism. No telling what kind of cost or price tag I would have to put on that, because I just don't know what I missed. I was too busy, with my alcohol relationship to look beyond that. So I met a woman and got serious about her. She happens to live 60 miles from me, so I could hide my drinking for the most part, but, you know, she's a phone person. She would call me at night, and I would be slurring. And she would, talk to me the next day, and I wouldn't remember the conversation. So she got to the bottom of it, and I had to admit everything, pretty much. Not everything I told my sponsor, but enough. And she told me to get help. I said, well, I've tried AA, so that's not a good route for me. I've been there, and I know what it's like, and I still drank. So I went to a counselor and told him my story. And, at the end of the very first session, he says, well, I recommend you go to AA. So there I was again. I stuck with him for a while. I still didn't go to AA. And then I started to, because that was his, that's what he was asking me to do. So I did it. And then I had that slip. That's where I had the 52 days sober, and I had the slip. I went back to him, I admitted it, and he goes, well, something caused you to do that. And I didn't think of it. I just thought, well, it's because I like to drink. I like the effect. I don't know what the reason is. But finally, I came into AA, and, faced with losing this woman or keeping up my alcohol relationship, which I was sick and tired of at this point anyway. I was drinking every night, passing out just to get to sleep, and feeling dull every day. And I just couldn't break the cycle. I didn't know how to get out of it. But I was left with the choice of this woman or the bottle. And I decided to try a new way of life. So I still wasn't totally doing it for myself. I had the outside motivation of keeping this woman. But what changed for me is I came in here and I realized that I had not been doing certain things. And number one, I had not been making myself accountable to anyone. I like to come to meetings like this, a speaker meeting, because I didn't have to talk. I didn't have to reveal anything about myself, and I might learn something, I might hear something that I can relate to, and that's all I wanted from it. But coming back after that, I became willing, and that was a key difference for me. I came in here looking for a sponsor, and by God, it wasn't going to be a matter of I'm going to interview sponsors till I find the right one, because I had been down that road before, and guess what? Nobody was ever the right one. I could justify my way out of not forming any kind of bond with another alcoholic. So I came in to the beginners meeting Tuesday night, and that's when my sponsor, who's here tonight, was the discussion leader, and I felt like I could relate to him. And so I said, I'm going to ask him to be my sponsor. And I told you part of the stipulations already, call for 30 days to prove you're serious. And after that, we started going through the book. And I had read a lot of Alcoholics Anonymous before, and I'd read other outside literature. I like to do that. But I'd never really listened too closely to what the book had to say or applied it to myself. I had gotten so far as to try to do a fourth step on my own, but I just couldn't figure it out. Because I didn't feel like I was resentful. I didn't feel like I was dishonest. I didn't feel like I was afraid of anything. I just loved alcohol. So, started on the first page, which was the blank page. He said, clear your mind. Start with a blank mind, just like this sheet. And we read it word for word. And I actually listened to it, doing it with someone else. And it felt great to be accountable to someone because I couldn't trust myself. I knew that if I was left to my own devices, I would just keep up my sneaky drinking. And that's what I thought I was getting away with all that time. And I thought that my life was manageable because I had managed to hold on to my job, but you heard about how I was manipulating that whole situation. I mean, I was working around people going home to their families. So I'm going home to the halfway house. And, you know, I have a curfew. And maybe their wives put a curfew on them, but not like the curfew I had. So, started reading through the book. And we got to the part where we do the fourth step. And something that helped me a lot was we had this worksheet that is actually a worksheet that is available for, I think The Rock has a website. I don't know how many of you have heard of The Rock, but it's a men's retreat. But you can find this worksheet there, and it tells you to list people, places, and things that have bothered you. And it was hard for me to even get started on that. First I figured, well, I better put my dad down here. I felt guilty about that. I don't want to pick on my dad. He's passed away, and he's not to blame. I said, well, maybe I do have a resentment there. So I put down my dad, put down my mom, and next thing I know, the floodgates opened. Once I started, and once I could see where I had been dishonest in some of these relationships, dishonest with them or dishonest about myself, my relationship with it, then the floodgates opened. And I poured out almost pretty much everybody I knew. I could put something down, and I could find my role in it. That's something that I had never thought about doing before. I always thought of their role in it, and I didn't want to pick on them. But then once I realized I had a role in whatever happened, it made a big difference for me. Places, I could think of places, my college. You know, why do I have to go to school with these upper-middle-class kids when I'm a lower-middle-class kid? My grandmother pays for my room and board. And, you know, all these other kids have cars and things like that. You know, that's just an example. But I could think of a lot of things, and it poured out, and I shared it with another person. My sponsor went down to The Rock with me. He suggested I do that. This was in October of 2008, so I was 5 months sober. And I remember reading my fourth step to him. I did my fifth step down by the lake. And there was a couple things that I had never told anybody, my deep, dark secrets, that were sexual transgressions as a result of being drunk. And I'd never told anybody that. And I said, I read everything. And I said, well, wait a minute, there's a couple more things that I didn't write down. Shared that with him. It turned out to be not a big deal. I didn't shock him. But I got it out, and he still was willing to look me in the eye afterwards. And that was a huge relief. From there, I immediately went into step 6 and 7, and I could do that right there on my own just by reading. And and believing in it. I went to the bonfire there at The Rock, and I had probably 20 pages was my fourth step. And so people would burn it in the bonfire. So I started to do that, but it was kind of windy, and I saw some other people put theirs in there, and the flames were going all over the place, and I didn't want to set anybody on fire. So I tore it up a little bit and just kind of fed it a piece at a time. I kept a copy of it for my eighth step. So I could, I'd have my list of harms. So I was already, through 6 and 7, it was up to my 8th step, I had to list my harms, and it was time to make amends. And that was the hardest part for me, because then I had to face other people that I had wronged. And I had some financial restitution to make, nothing really huge, but like I had borrowed my friend from work. She asked me to drop them off at the airport, and I had her car. While I had her car, I was driving it one time. I was drunk. I backed into the side of my house, and I dented her bumper. And I was thinking, gee, I hope she doesn't notice that. I hope it was already there. But they did notice it, and I just denied that I had been drinking. They asked me, had you been drinking? Because they'd seen me drink before. I said, no. But then after I was doing my ninth step, I didn't tell her that I was in AA. I didn't blow my anonymity that way because she's a coworker. But I paid her $300 for the bumper. Don't know how much it really was. I've made amends to the pizza place that I was working a part-time job at Delta. We took some pay cuts, so to make up for it, I took a part-time job delivering pizza. So I was a driver, and sometimes I would stop at the liquor store down there and get my favorite, the little pints of Jack Daniels. Started out at $1.99. That was a heck of a deal. They kept going up, probably because of people like me driving up the demand. And I would drink those, and I would eat the mints and think I was getting away with something, but they figured it out, especially when I like had a delivery still sitting in my car when I drove back one time. And the owner, it was a little mom-and-pop pizza place down in Palmetto, and the owner actually bought a breathalyzer. He probably named it after me because he had to get it because of me, and he would test me. He didn't fire me, but he let me stay on. And I almost got fired from the pizza place. So I made amends to him afterwards. I told him that what I was doing, and they were all for it. Everybody that I approached with my amends, I had the exact wrong idea of how they were going to react, because everybody was so gracious, it was just unbelievable. And it just felt really good for me to man up and admit to them what I had done. And some people, I told them, you know, what I'm doing now, you know, my program, people that I trusted. Some people I didn't need to. The people, my mom and dad both passed away. Alcohol, you know, was a major contributor to that. They both had throat cancer. They smoked also. I made my amends to them by writing a letter. My grandmother, who paid for my room and board in college, who I never hardly gave the time of day to. I made my amends there. And went to about the 12 steps. I think that I was always looking for something that I could follow that gave me the principles. I love the principles behind the 12 steps. I was always looking for something where I didn't have to use religion, because I was raised Catholic, but I have gone back to church because I like the message there, and because I think it would make my mom happy. I'm not totally bought into the whole religious thing, but I definitely have a higher power. I sense my higher power with me all the time. Those times when I used to be riding by myself, you know, drinking and driving, which I used to like to do, or making those decisions where I would drink all by myself and isolate, now my higher power is with me. And I know that's not God's will. I know that's not what He wants me to do. And I have that strong sense now. And that's been instilled here in AA, where I couldn't get it anywhere else. And I was always looking for something like the principles. I had them memorized at one time, but step one is honesty. Step two, my favorite, is hope. Step three is faith or surrender. Step four, courage. Step five, integrity. Step six, willingness. Step seven, humility. Step eight, brotherly love. Step nine, discipline. Step 10, perseverance. Step 11, awareness. Step 12, service. Service, I do participate in AA. As Tim mentioned, I'm the treasurer here for the beginners meeting on Tuesday nights, and that makes sure that I always come on Tuesday. I like having that commitment. Another part of my sponsor stipulation was that I, when the time came, I become a sponsor. Well, I've had a few people approach me, but I haven't really sponsored anyone yet. So I'm still waiting to completely fulfill step 12. I do believe it will happen. I do believe it's God's plan. And I never believed in God's plan before. I guess I really never really had any plan, now that I think about it. I want to read a little something that makes me remember that I don't necessarily know what God's plan is, but the fact that He has let me survive all of the close calls that I have had, not kill anybody in the process or kill myself. I left out a few other stories that, you know, you probably don't need any more convincing. But I think this is kind of a funny story. It's a Buddhist story about a poor farmer whose one horse ran away. All his neighbors came to him in sympathy, saying, "What bad luck." "Maybe," he responded. The next day, the horse returned with several other wild horses. "What great luck," his neighbors exclaimed. "Maybe," he responded. A few days later, the farmer's son was trying to tame one of the wild horses when he was thrown off and broke his leg. "What terrible luck," the neighbors said. "Maybe," he said. A week later, the army came through the village to draft all the young men, but seeing the broken leg of the farmer's son, they left him in peace. "What wonderful luck," the neighbor said. "Maybe," the farmer responded. And so it goes. So, what happened with me with my DUIs? What terrible luck, you might say, you know, and a lot of us do that. But it helped me get here, and that's what makes me think of that. I don't know what kind of things can happen in my life, you know, that will change it. But I do know that I never planned on becoming an alcoholic, but I am an alcoholic, and I accept that now. And that is a change that I can accept. And, you know, change is a scary thing. You know, changing from relying on alcohol to get me through life and not facing reality was something I was afraid to do. But I'm learning to overcome fear in here. And I'm learning to, I've accepted the fact that I can't drink. Just like I've accepted the fact that I can't do a lot of things. Like, I always wanted to dunk a basketball. I'd like to run a 4-minute mile. I can't do those things. And I also can't drink. And what I would like to leave everybody with more than anything is hope. Hope that you can discover a new way of life without alcohol, like I have. Get past that craving for that first drink. Get past the obsession of alcohol. And learn to rely on a spiritual power to replace that. And I feel that's with me all the time. I feel it's around us and through us and in us, like the Force in Star Wars. That's like the higher power to me. Can't really explain it or put my finger on it. I can't, as I understand it from step three, well, I don't really understand it, but I'm going to keep coming back and keep trying to understand it a little better through everybody and through trying to help others. And I hope that through my story, someone else will get hope. And I'm going to close with a quote from a movie. And this was from Shawshank Redemption. Oh, I wanted to, I mentioned acceptance before. Let me read acceptance real quick from page 417, because this is something that I carry around with me and remind myself. Acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I'm disturbed, it's because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact of my life, unacceptable to me. I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it is supposed to be at this moment. Nothing, absolutely nothing, happens in God's world by mistake. That's God's plan. And finally, I'll leave you with a quote about hope, if I can find it. Oh, here it is. It's from Shawshank Redemption. Andy Dufresne, that's Tim Robbins' character. He's talking to Red. That's Morgan Freeman's character, so took a little liberty and changed Red to Ed. He says, "Remember, Ed, hope is a good thing, maybe the best of things, and no good thing ever dies." So I hope that I can continue in AA, and I hope I can help others as much as possible. And thank you for all you've done for me. Thank you for being here tonight.
Excellent. Excellent job, Ed. Goose. Yeah. And they trust you with the money now. Isn't that amazing? Okay, seventh tradition, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Donations support this group and AA Central Ed Zone. And I've asked David Scott, Ed's sponsor, to give out the chips.
I'm begging my mouth out. Glad to be here, glad to be alive, and so. Here in Ava, we have a white chip coming in and coming back. Silver chip for 30 days. Red chip for 90 days. Yellow chip for 6 months. Green chip, 9 months. Blue chip, 1 year or multiples thereof. Would anyone like to pick up a white chip tonight? All right. Come back.
In the right place.
Damn sure. Anybody got 30 days? All right. Anybody got 90 days? Does anyone have, I said 90 days. Does anyone have 6 months? 9 months? Any birthdays we don't know about? Congratulations, everyone, on chips you're holding.
Thank you, David. Okay, it's time for AA. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll do something a little different. Is there anything that somebody needs to share that would make the difference of them taking a drink tonight or not? A brief moment. Okay, well, we've got AA announcements.
My name is Mark. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mark.
I have a teacher in Lucas County. Would anyone like the AA minister to see that?
And we've got alcoholic kickball on March 22nd. I don't have the thing. It's on the board. But it's going to be at a park close by, and I bet it's going to be good. I got to work, but I used to love playing kickball. And I was sober then when I used to do that, so it's got to be fun doing it as an adult. Next week we've got Angela P. She's got just picked up a 20-year chip, spent 15 years at Nava Club, and is now out in Clarkston. But she picked up her 20-year chip here at the 545 not too long ago. And so we're going to welcome her next week. And she's going to tell a great story, I'm sure. And Thomas from the 7:30 early morning study group will be here 2 Mondays from tonight. And Thomas has been sober since 2002. And is a bona fide character. It's going to be a fun night. I can promise you that. Any other announcements? Okay. Well, I'd like to remind everybody that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And for those who will, please join us in the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Keep coming back to the works if you work.
It works.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, welcome. What part of California?
Redondo Beach. Redondo Beach.
Redondo Beach.
Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
Everybody, I'm happy to be here.
Spent a little time in Big Rock.
Okay.
For a while. Yeah, not too long. That's the most
nice.
Very nice to meet you. Hope you're around and come back. Dude. Thanks for coming in. If you get here early, you can help it. You can get here early next time. Oh, okay. What part?
Homa.
Yeah. Corky Kornoff. You know Corky down there? Kornoff Aviation. He's an old guy. He has a little company down there. Probably does.
You know where Morgan City is?
Yeah.
Well, my grandpa has been down there to show business over there for like 30 years.
Yeah, I can work, but
that's where I was born and raised at home. But right now I live in Morgan City.
Yeah.
And now I'm here to make my own school. Yeah, we didn't know exactly where the place was.
Thank you.
Okay. The 8 o'clock. Ed. Yeah. No, actually, I got 11 o'clock and then a 1:30. Yeah. There's a schedule I can make sure you get for you. Yeah, man, those chips were awesome. Everybody was just digging into those things. Hey, you know where we are? Now the schedule is on the board. Could you say this one? He's coming back tomorrow for a meet close to 11. Good luck, man. Give it a try. Yeah.